Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So somebody know where we are exactly? Oh, somebody moved the marker. There. Okay. So reading from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb. Kamsa, however, saw the transcendental beauty of his sister Devaki, and he at once concluded that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had taken shelter in her womb. She had never before looked so wonderfully beautiful. He could distinctly understand. Start the paragraph with Lord Brahma. Okay, let's see. A paragraph or two after that. How does it start? I don't see anything like that. Okay, at this time, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, accompanied by great sages like Narada and followed by many other demigods, invisibly appeared in the house of Kamsa. They began to pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and select verses, which are very pleasing to the devotees and which award fulfillment of their desires. The first words they spoke acclaim that the Lord is true to his vow. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna descends to this material world just to protect the pious and destroy the impious. That is his vow. The demigods could understand that the Lord had taken his residence within the womb of Devaki to fulfill his vow, and they were very glad the Lord was appearing in order to fulfill his mission. Of course, it's interesting to say they appeared invisibly. You know, the demigods appeared invisibly in the house of Kamsa. So then the demigods addressed the Lord as Satyam Param, or the Supreme Absolute Truth. Everyone is searching after the truth. That is the philosophical way of life. The demigods give information that the supreme absolute truth is Krishna. One who becomes fully Krishna conscious can attain the absolute truth. Krishna is the absolute truth because, unlike the relative truth, he is truth in all three phases of eternal time. Time is divided into past, present, and future. Krishna is truth always, past, present, and future. In the material world, everything is being controlled by supreme time in the course of past, present, and future. But before the creation, Krishna was existing. And when there is creation, everything is resting in Krishna. And when this creation is finished, Krishna will still remain. Therefore, he is the absolute truth in all circumstances. So this means that the temporary manifestations of the material world aren't true in the absolute sense. They come, they go, they're truths, but they're relative truths. Sometimes something is true, sometimes it's not true, but Krishna is true always, in the past, present, and future, because he's always present, always existing. Therefore, he is the absolute truth in all circumstances. If there is any truth within the material world, it emanates from the supreme truth, Krishna. If there is any opulence within this material world, the cause of the opulence is Krishna. If there is any reputation within this material world, the cause of the reputation is Krishna. If there's any strength within this material world, the cause of the strength is Krishna. If there's any wisdom and education within this material world, the cause of such wisdom and education is Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the source of all relative truths. Yaham sarvasya prabhavo matas sarvam pravartate. Krishna says, everything is coming from me. This material world is composed of five principal elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And all such elements are emanations from Krishna. Bhumir apanala vayu kam manabuddha evacha ankara matiya me binaprakrita ashtada. So Krishna is explaining that, yes, there are these different elements, but they're his prakriti, they're his material energy. The material scientists accept these five primary elements as the cause of the material manifestation, but the elements in their gross and subtle states are produced by Krishna. The living entities who are working within this material world are products of his marginal potency. In the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that the whole manifestation is the combination of two kinds of energies of Krishna: the superior energy and the inferior energy. The living entities are the superior energy, and the dead material elements are his inferior energy. In its dormant stage, everything remains in Krishna. So there are these material elements: earth, fire, air, water, and ether, fire. And then there are the subtle material elements: mind, intelligence, and false ego. Then apare mitvastam yam prakriti vidhi me param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayadam daryate jagat. Beyond these gross and subtle material elements is the jiva, which is different. The jiva is the living entity, its characteristic, its consciousness. So the material scientists make a mistake. They think that the material elements combine and that they produce life, symptoms, consciousness. You know, if you make a certain combination of molecules in a very complex state, then they think from that complex arrangement of molecules, consciousness, life arises. And if you disarrange the chemicals, then there's no life, no consciousness, nothing like that. So Srila Prabhupada wanted us to challenge those ideas, to show that life comes from life. Life isn't just a combination of chemicals. Consciousness is not just a combination of chemicals. It's a symptom, an inseparable symptom of the soul, the jiva. But all of these energies, they come from Krishna. The marginal potency composed of the living entities, that comes from Krishna. And the material energies, the gross and subtle material energies, they're also coming from Krishna, who's the source of everything. Janmadyasya yataha. Of course, one reason Krishna comes is not just to kill demons, but to destroy their demoniac philosophy. And one of their biggest demoniac philosophies is this idea that life comes from matter, or consciousness comes from chemicals. So the demigods continue to offer their respectful prayers under the supreme form of the personality of Godhead, Krishna. By analytical study of the material manifestation. So this analytical study of the material manifestation that we get through the Sankhya philosophy is also a kind of prayer, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is this material manifestation? It is just like a tree. A tree stands on the ground. Similarly, the tree of the material manifestation is standing on the ground of material nature. This material manifestation is compared to a tree because a tree is ultimately cut off in the course of time. A tree is called vriksha. Vriksha means that thing which will be ultimately cut off. Therefore, this tree of the material manifestation cannot be accepted as the ultimate truth because it is influenced by time. But Krishna's body is eternal. He existed before the material manifestation. He is existing while the material manifestation is continuing. And when it will be dissolved, he will continue to exist. Therefore, only Krishna can be accepted as the absolute truth. In the Upanishads, Krishna is sometimes compared to a spider. People like to talk about Spider-Man. But there's actually an element of truth there in the sense that the spider, it can produce from itself a web made of silk. And it can manifest that web. And then when it's finished with the web, the spider can actually take the silk back within itself. I was just reading a scientific report about how spiders do that. They actually eat the web. They take it back in when they're finished with it. They can do that. So in this way, you know, Krishna's like a spider, because the spider's always existing. You know, the web is temporarily manifested. So the spider's there before the web. When the web is manifested, the spider is maintaining it, controlling it. And then when the spider is finished with the web, it takes, you know, the web back into itself. So Krishna has these various potencies within himself. When he wants to, he can manifest the material universes, and then he can withdraw them back within himself. But in every stage, Krishna is the absolute. The Katha Upanishad also cites the example of the tree of the material manifestation standing on the ground of material nature. This tree has two kinds of fruits, distress and happiness. Those who are living in the tree of the body are just like two birds. One bird is the localized aspect of Krishna, known as the Paramatma, and the other bird is a living entity. The living entity is eating the fruits of this material manifestation. Sometimes he eats the fruits of happiness, and sometimes he eats the fruits of distress. But the other bird is not interested in eating the fruit of distress or happiness because he is self-satisfied. The Katha Upanishad states that one bird on the tree of the body is eating the fruits and the other bird is simply witnessing. So this is the super soul. And the super soul is described in the Bhagavad Gita. He's simply witnessing and giving sanction, giving permission for the living entity to eat the fruits of happiness and distress. Upadrasta anumantas cha. So Krishna says, yes, I'm the super soul, and I'm the overseer, the upadrasta, the witness, and anumantas cha. I'm the one who gives permission, because actually we can't do anything without the permission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we have our freedom to act, and we're forced to accept the results of our actions in terms of material happiness or material distress. And Krishna is witnessing that, but he's not responsible for that. We're responsible because we have our minute freedom, our minute independence. And Krishna allows us to exercise our independence, and he also arranges for us to accept the results of our activities. But Krishna is not responsible for the particular happiness and distress that we experience. We are responsible for that. The root of this tree, the roots of this tree extend in three directions. This means that the root of the tree is the three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Just as the tree's root expands, so by association of the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, one expands his duration of material existence. The taste of the fruits are four kinds: religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, and ultimately liberation. According to the different associations in the three modes of material nature, the living entities are tasting different kinds of religiosity, different kinds of economic development, different kinds of sense gratification, and different kinds of liberation. Yeah, so no one is really in just one mode of nature. Whenever one material mode of nature is present, the other modes are also present to a greater or lesser degree. So in the material world, nobody can be purely in the material mode of goodness. There's also some passion and some ignorance there. Nobody can be purely in the mode of ignorance, material mode of ignorance. So some tinge of passion and goodness must be there. So according to the taste that, you know, the living entity has, you know, he tries to taste these different modes and therefore experiences a different kind of economic development. You know, some people, they're struggling very hard in some little job. Some people are dealing with billions of dollars. You have traders on Wall Street. They push a little button on their computer and, you know, a $1 billion trade is made. And, you know, they make huge profits, hundreds of millions of dollars, simply by moving little accounts here and there. And then some people are struggling just to make a little bit of money. So everybody has, you know, a certain kind of economic development. They experience different kinds of religiosity according to the modes of nature. You know, somebody might be a very big priest in a very big temple. Somebody might be a poor person putting a penny in the hundi box, or giving some contribution to their church or mosque or temple. So everyone, according to their position, is experiencing dharma, artha, kama, and moksha in different degrees according to the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance that they find themselves in. Practically all material work is performed in ignorance. But because there are three qualities, sometimes the quality of ignorance is covered with goodness or passion. The taste of these material fruits is accepted through five senses. The five sense organs through which knowledge is acquired are subjected to six kinds of whips: lamentation, illusion, infirmity, death, hunger, and thirst. So these, yeah, there are five jnana indriyas, five knowledge-acquiring senses. You know, there's the sense of vision, the sense of taste, the smell, sense of hearing, sense of touch. So, and then there are the working senses, the arms, the legs, the voice, the organ of evacuation, the organ of reproduction. So it says these are all being whipped. We're trying to experience things through these senses, but as we're experiencing vision, taste, touch, all of these things, simultaneously, those same senses are subjected to lamentation. Somebody's always lamenting, oh, this bad thing happened to me. Oh, I wish I could have done that. I wish I could have had this sense gratification or that sense gratification. Or I used to have this sense gratification. Now I don't have it anymore. Illusion, we're chasing after so many illusions, infirmity, the senses become weakened by disease or by old age. There's hunger and thirst, finally death. So this material body or the material manifestation is covered by seven layers: skin, flesh, blood, marrow, bone, fat, semen. The branches of the tree are eight: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. There are nine gates in this body: the two eyes, the two nostrils, two ears, one mouth, one genital, one rectum. And there are 10 kinds of internal air passing within the body: prana, apana, udana, vyana, samana, etc. So these vital airs are powering, you know, the sensory machinery of the body. So it's a very complex bit of machinery. But its only purpose is to keep us entangled in material existence. Of course, if we use the senses properly, under the direction of Krishna's representative, the bona fide spiritual master, then we can get out of that entanglement, especially in the human form of life. But this is why Krishna is appearing in this world, because we're tangled in this tree of material existence, and Krishna wants to help us get out. So the two birds seated in this tree, as explained above, are the living entity and the localized Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma. The root cause of the material manifestation described here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands himself to take charge of the three qualities of the material world. Vishnu takes charge of the mode of goodness, Brahma takes charge of the mode of passion, and Lord Shiva takes charge of the mode of ignorance. Brahma, by the mode of passion, creates this manifestation. Lord Vishnu maintains this manifestation by the mode of goodness, and Lord Shiva annihilates it by the mode of ignorance. The whole creation ultimately rests in the Supreme Lord. He is the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction. And when the whole manifestation is dissolved in its subtle form as the Supreme Lord's energy, it rests within his body. So the demigods, who are Krishna's servants, are giving a lot of information here about our situation in the material world and how Krishna is the ultimate cause of this material manifestation, the material bodies, and things like that. So does anybody have any questions or comments? Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Actually, the spider makes two kinds of silk. One is sticky, and the other is not sticky. So he kind of he sticks to the other one.
Oh,
yeah, they're pretty amazing creatures, spiders.
And he knows which one is.
Yeah, he knows which one. But like you said, he's the master of it, so he doesn't get caught. He doesn't get caught in his web.
Internal energy and external energy.
Yeah.